There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
This is The Agenda with you through till 1 o'clock this afternoon. Extended show now. 3 hours, no longer two. First day of a few changes down here at Dubai Eye 103.8. One thing that doesn't change, though, is a certain Donald Trump making headlines over in the United States. Fascinating story, this one. One that I've been following over the weekend. Fiona's been doing some digging for us as well. This famed op-ed piece.
That whammed Donald Trump this week.
Yes, well done, yeah.
Saw what you did there.
It's rare to have a week without a Donald Trump story, or even a minute, an hour, I think. But yes, this is the explosive anonymous op-ed in the New York Times, supposedly written by a senior official in the Trump administration that did applaud and support many of the administration's policies, but also claimed to be a member of the resistance that would prevent the president from undertaking potentially catastrophic behaviors and limiting that through various devious ways. But of course, Trump's been tweeting that there should be an investigation and the Justice Department, despite no laws being broken. And everyone is trying to guess who wrote it. Current suspects are extensive, obviously, but certainly the vice president is one of the people, Mike Pence, at the top of the list, mainly due to a linguistic detective work being done. The use of the word lodestar in the piece, which is a very common phrase of his. So he's definitely got a little bit of a target on his back as a potential author. My vote actually is for Chief of Staff John Kelly.
Mm. It just seems to be, and again, I know that the you know, the pointing of fingers and ne'er-do-well and connivings behind backs, nothing new in politics.
No.
But it just seems to be, they've seemed to have been, what's the word I'm looking for? They seem to be supersized under Donald
Indeed.
Trump with this whole thing. And the fact that he's got his team, you know, trying to eke out these spies at the moment, it begs the question where it all stops.
Well, exactly. And he obviously has a big problem with criticism of any kind. But of course, people from both sides of the aisle are criticizing the writer as for remaining anonymous. And that there's an argument that if one is within the administration, one should believe in its ideals and should not be working against it. And therefore, this person should resign and name themselves. But certainly, given the new levels of alarm that could be attested to a Donald Trump presidency, given the powers of the office, perhaps there is some salvation in there being certain people who understand that there is a button he could push that could cause a lot of problems, and that perhaps curtailing the potential for that is no bad thing.
Archie Behrens, politics wasn't always like this, or was it?
It's been like it since time immemorial.
Yeah.
Oh, you don't think Trump's changed politics a little bit?
But I don't think he's... It's only because he's a very different type of president to any other that the US has had. But, I mean, the whole area of, you know, backstabbing, back-channeling, criticizing without putting your name to it. I mean, I studied ancient history, and the ancient Romans, the ancient Greeks were full of all this.
Mm.
But
they didn't tweet about it, did they?
No, but they did whatever was available to them at the time.
Put it on a tablet.
No, you know, or spoke publicly, back channeled. There is nothing new in this. The basic concept of criticizing people in authority in public through an op-ed. I mean, it's interesting the criticism that the perpetrator, whoever it is obviously the vitriol of the president is directed at them. But let's step back. What has this guy actually done? I suspect it's somebody who has clearly tried to give that advice personally to the president, had it completely ignored, had it thrown back in their face, saying, right, I'm going to give this advice publicly. Mm. The New York Times is under pressure. It's sort of seems or accused of breaching journalistic or, convention. And that's not true at all. I mean, newspapers regularly write anonymous leaders. Mm. You look at them, something like The Economist. They never put a name to an article, yet that article can be severely critical of people in power, right around the world. So I don't think the newspaper is at fault, and I think it is quite within its rights to withhold the name of the person who's written it. I mean, it's between Donald Trump and his advisors to work out who did it. He's clearly, exactly as you say, Fiona, he bridles at any type of criticism, and this is just another example of that. But to your original question, Tom, this has been going on forever, all this type of behavior.
It has been going on forever. But I wonder whether, this is part of that wider criticism you might level, not just at politics, but, life in general, this sort of dumbing down of industries and the ways we do things, simplifying.
To be honest, that underlines a lot of the reasons behind Donald Trump's entire campaign. He spoke to people in a very sort of lowbrow way in, these short, catchy sentences that don't address particular issues at all, but ride the wave of populism by telling people kind of what they want to hear instead of actually reaching for improvement and education and, elevating debate. And, you know, in terms of this, although backstabbing's gone on all the time, I would definitely argue that this level of this op-ed is an example of the absolute destruction of conventions and norms that has taken place within the forum of politics in the US, in terms of there was always a respect and a level of performance that one could expect from one's leaders. And Donald Trump has perpetually blown that apart. Oh. And to have someone from within the administration be so anti that is quite scandalous.
Prachi, thank you very much indeed to you, responding to a couple of the conversations we were having earlier. Prachi says this: Trump is a bully who feels that anyone who doesn't agree with him should be branded as wrong. No wonder his admin is scared of releasing their name. Also, he shows that if you shout a lie often enough, people start believing it's the truth. It's the whole fake news thing. Thank you very much indeed, Prachi, for that one. Let us now turn our attention to Paris by way of Archie Berens. There are great chefs that have are working in and around Paris at the moment. One of them, though, has been making the headlines. Why?
So French super chef Alain Ducasse breathes again.
Very good. Very good.
Fiona came up with that one. I have to give credit for
just
that.
Just taken it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
should,
no, 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 no.
Should
no,
just, what? You know, done a runner before having the paper.
Yeah,
no,
that's
right. Good. Very good. Very good linking again. So Alain Ducasse, who actually is known in Dubai because he is the man behind Mix in the Emerald Palace in the Kempinski on the Palm. He has been fighting a long-running battle with the Eiffel Tower. Not literally, but he lost the famous iconic Jules Verne restaurant, and he's lost the right to run that restaurant. So instead of backing down and going away quietly, what he's done is he's gone and set up a gastronomic all-electric floating restaurant on the Seine, moored right at the foot of the Eiffel Tower, which, I mean, that's typically French, isn't it? You don't take things lying down. The French are the best in the world at protesting. And even though he may have lost in court, he's thought, right, I'm going to, I'm not going to take this lying down. I'm going to go and set up my own restaurant right under your noses. And guess what? I can offer guests the experience of floating up and down the Seine and not just seeing the Eiffel Tower, but all the other wonderful landmarks in the centre of Paris. Good for him, I say.
Do we know who he's competing with? Who's taken over the restaurant?
I don't. The article, it's actually in the Sunday Telegraph.
I think
weekend.
It's Ribuchon, isn't it? Is it Ribuchon? Jean Ribuchon?
Maybe I'm not sure the article says, but anyway, Mr. Ducasse, bon chance, I say to you.
Yes, I mean,
and bon appetit.
Indeed,
no, that's not
indeed.
Jean Ribuchon. He's Jean Ribuchon passed away recently, didn't he? Why was he in the news? Yeah, he passed away recently.
Think, yes.
I think that's why Alain become the Jean Ribuchon used to be the most rated star-wise chef in the whole of France, possibly in the whole of the world. I think Alain Ducasse has taken over since the passing of Jean Ribuchon. So, good on him for making a stand as well. Why not?
Have you ever been to the Jules Verne?
I've not. No,
no, no. Me neither.
No.
No, Michelin star dining's a bit low, unfortunately, with my budgetary requirements.
I'm lucky if I get a crepe or something like that in a corner around there, you know, let alone up to the top. In fact, I've never been to the Eiffel Tower. I've seen it.
Nope, I've never actually been to Paris, so, yep.
I've been up the Eiffel Tower, I will say that.
Good,
but,
recommend
oh,
it?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's sort of one of those tick, you've done it.
Yeah.
And it is an amazing building.
Good view.
Amazing structure, yes, fantastic.
Yeah. 401
Good view.
Is it?
Yeah.
Nice view.
I've not been up it either.
Have you not? No?
No.
Let's go to Toronto now. Film festival ongoing. Let's get the latest from Fiona. What's the news coming from the TFF?
Well, according to the TFF, she will not be loved.
Man, I got a name.
Actually, on this occasion. Sorry, Maroon 5. So apparently the big debate this year at the Toronto Film Festival is the underrepresentation of women, particularly women of colour, of minority ethnicities in the world of movie reviewers and critics. So apparently white males outnumber women and minorities 31-1 in the land of movie critics. So I think last year, white males wrote 78.7% of all movie reviews that came out versus anyone else. And they're proving that they tend to review films that have female leads, ethnic leads, as with much lower ratings, which can obviously have an impact on their box office performance.
Mm. Is that a global figure?
The reviews, yes, I believe it is.
Whoa. Yeah. I mean, I'm stunned by that.
I mean, it is stunning, but again, I suppose it shows the sort of backlash of what has been a very male-dominated industry across the board.
Well, indeed. And I mean, you know, if you think about the numbers of, they had the protest at Cannes with the 81 women on the steps representing the only 81 directors that are female ever at the festival. You know, directors, even movie stars, bankable movie stars, they're all, you know, white males in most of these cases. And they still very much dominate the industry.
And we've seen the hashtags obviously develop in recent times, and actors and actresses taking a stand on red carpets the world over. Yeah. It seems though that film festivals seem to become that focus for them, don't they? Because there's more of the eyeballs on, and they can make more of a statement.
It's their platform to speak out. Yeah,
at Golden Globes, Cannes, or more recently Toronto Film Festival. And when you look at it from a numbers point of view, it's difficult to argue with, isn't it? I mean, the number of films we see that are dominated by male leads, and then you have a female co-star, because for so long that's how scriptwriters have been writing films.
The sort of the pretty thing that's there, whereas there's much more balance obviously going on now. But you look at a lot of, much like, you know, food critics, you know, traditionally a lot of them have been, you know, males who are now sort of, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s, who would, but understandably, have quite traditional approaches to things that they like to watch and do. And the worry is that they're not necessarily judging a production on its quality of filming, on its script. You know, they're looking at it from, you know, this is breaking down the way that I like to view things, and therefore I don't think it's a good idea. But there are trends being bucked. I mean, you know, the success of things like Wonder Woman, Black Panther, those kind of movies that are changing the landscape of Hollywood and the film industry globally, despite what any of these critics may wish was the other case.
Yeah.
But irrespective of whether, I mean, as you say, films, the stereotypical film is the male star and the female sort of, if you like, sidekick. I mean, that is quite formulaic. It's not necessarily always the case. And as you say, there are more and more films with, you know, female leads. You think of some that you mentioned. I think of two, Lara Croft as well. It was a hugely successful franchise. And Angelina Jolie herself is a, you know, extremely talented and high profile and, you know, well regarded, not just actress, but you know, in terms of all the sort of philanthropic work that she's done as well. But regardless of that, I'm still stunned by it, because whether or not the industry is male dominated, women are just as capable of having an opinion and being able to write well about any number of subjects. I mean, it's not as if the world of journalism is, you know, male dominated. There are plenty of extremely talented female journalists in all, you know, right across the world. So,
but I think you'd be interested by the figures of men running news organizations, running magazines, heading up editors. I would imagine, and I don't have the exact figures, but that those in positions of editorship and above in news organizations across the world, I would imagine, still very much more of a male skew with.
I'm sure it's a majority. I doubt it's 1 in 31, though.
Possibly not. I would hope not.
Yeah,
Let's hope not.
I mean, I can think of many, you know, senior female editors of many publications. But your point is well made, and I'm sure you're right. But even so, it's a staggering and very, you know, it's one should not be. One should be concerned by that, right?
Especially
if you care about the film industry, you should be concerned about
it. As a woman, I'm never happier than sat in judgment of others. So, you know, I feel like they're missing an important opportunity there.
Yeah.
Let us now turn our attention to the landscape in which we call our home. All of us here, all the 200-plus nationalities that call the UAE home. You know, I suppose that is part and parcel of the challenge for many of us living here, is with so many different cultures and such a multicultural landscape, it is how to best navigate that without getting upset.
Indeed. And not that it requires a lot of spark, but the piece that's raised it today, Selina Denman wrote in The National about bluntness in the UAE and something that we can all relate to. She was using specific examples of having, as a woman, being concerned that perhaps she had not started her family early enough. But there are lots of different examples of certainly people who come from cultures where one doesn't discuss body shape or body goals or even life goals, to find oneself in an office and someone comments on the fact that perhaps they've eaten too much on their holiday and they're looking a little bit larger than when they went away, in quite a candid manner that would shock a lot of people, but for others is very much a part of life. That's happened to me on far too many occasions, unfortunately.
It's funny though, isn't it? It's something that I learned very early here. You know, when you as you say, when you come away, if you let yourself go a bit over the summer holidays or winter holidays or whatever, and you come back and people say, "Oh, look at you! Haven't you put on weight?" Yep. And you, you know, I grew up in a part of the world where that would just be deemed rude.
Yep. Mm.
But you've got to suppose, Arch, come to that understanding that it's not meant that way here, is it?
Absolutely not. I think that, you know, talking about money as well is another area. You sort of, people are much happier to talk about, you know, how much rent they're paying, for example. I mean, that's a sort of open subject. So you sort of think, I'd rather that's between me and my landlord and my family. I don't want to particularly be sharing, you know, what rent I'm paying. Yet here, it's absolutely quite open. And expatriates, you know, absolutely get into that. We now talk openly, you know, you even have groups of people living on the same compound, happily sharing. That has its own commercial purpose, clearly, because you sort of, as a collective, you understand what your landlord is willing to go down to. But it's certainly, you know, more generally, people absolutely will talk about their money in a way, like you say, Tom, in the UK, it was like, you just don't talk about that at all. So, yeah, directness, bluntness. Adapting to the...
I mean, do you think there's anything wrong with that, Fiona? Because we're just sort of getting to that point, you know, you're getting to the point quicker. I mean...
Yeah, I mean, certainly I prefer a more candid approach. I've been... might have got myself into trouble for utilising it myself. But it is a very interesting discussion. My natural inclination would be to say, yes, you know, people need to understand that, you know, there are people from different places and they have different norms of behaviour and communication and we should all let it go. But it is quite funny to find oneself on that side of the argument when there's a much wider global argument about not offending and being tolerant and understanding other people and making allowances for their needs and their specific ideals, and yet we're also here, we're kind of like, yeah, just let it go, it's fine.
But it's age as well, isn't it? You get that quite often, don't you? Your age is mentioned, or your greying hair, or whatever it might be. Yeah. It just sort of brought,
or you better
light.
Hurry up and have babies. You
yeah,
know,
yeah. Those very sort of matter-of-fact things, which, you know, have a time, they have a place that those should be discussed. They're not everyone's business, are they?
It used to be limited to your grandmother at family events, but now it's open season now.
Actually, I read an article the other day, I think it was in one of the British papers, but it was about the 10 questions that you must not and cannot ask in an interview when you're interviewing someone. And they were all, you know, are you married? Do you have children? These are considered, I mean, almost opening you up to litigation. Whereas here... I mean, people, you know, get asked that all the time. Sometimes, you know, I mean, you hear job interviews and people quite happily would, you know, be asked, you know, or rather interviewers would quite happily ask those questions and would not consider it to be either inappropriate and certainly not illegal. So again, that goes to the direct approach. It's interesting, though, picking up on the cultural nuances. And it's ironic for a region where direct questions and direct statements are considered the norm. But at the same time, in business meetings particularly, you find it's considered rude to go straight to the matter at hand that is under discussion in the meeting. You're expected to make a little bit of small talk first and, you know, ask somebody about their family or did they have a nice weekend or how was their holiday or general sort of small talk before you get into the agenda of the meeting. And it is very much considered rude. And, you know, the Americans and particularly are sort of criticized for, you know, sit down, right, let's get started. And which is odd, you know, that sits at odds with the ability to talk directly or the propensity to talk directly to people.
Well, I appreciate both of you talking directly to us today. thank you very much indeed for joining us on what has been a new chapter for the agenda in Dubai I-103.8. Fiona and Archie and Bono and Ed and Tracy and all the others that have joined in the first couple of hours.
So, a multicultural selection of music.
Listen, it's been an absolute pleasure having you guys in. As always, we appreciate your time because I know you're busy, busy, busy. So stopping in and sharing your thoughts on some of the big stories have been appreciated. Arch, if people want to get in touch with you and your crew down at Hanover Middle East, best way for them to do that is?
info@hanovercoms.com.
Get involved on that one.
England, or tweet us.
England, India, test match ongoing at the moment. You've got one eye on that one. What's looking most likely for you in this final test of the series?
Oh, I think England have got it pretty wrapped up. They had a very good day yesterday. And batting, yeah, India batting last. I think England win either late on the fourth day or early on the fifth would be my call.
On that one. And Fiona DeVivio, thank you so much indeed for your time. If anyone's looking for help with copy, for help with writing, for help just in general, how do they get in touch with you?
I'll go Twitter. That's nice and simple. @FussyMadam. I'll be there, happy to help in any way I can.
Good to have you on board, Fiona. Thank you so much indeed for your time this morning. And thanks to all of you for your kind comments with regards to the show, the new format, and of course the contributions of our two guest paper reviewers this morning.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcast at DubaiEye1038.com.